Hi Chris, how are you?
Good morning Rod, I'm well and here we are for episode 134 and it's the 19th of August and should we get straight into it?
Well, we've got to talk about the weather a little bit. We're recording this unusually because it's first thing in the morning on a Sunday. We're going to do 134 and 135 together. So sorry, dear listeners, you might notice there's a bit of a gravelly edge to our voice this morning, as obviously Sunday mornings are not quite as good for us as the usual evening recording time. But stay with us. We'll hopefully bring you two good shows.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And the weather is looking like it's going to be a beautiful day. So that's what it looks like here in the Cotswolds.
Bit overcast here, but such is life, living by the coast.
Right, so now let's get into follow-up then. So first up then we've got macOS Sequoia, which I'm still not sure about the name, will not prompt you weekly anymore. They're now going to go for monthly, which feels marginally better.
Well, I mean, we said last week when I ranted, and you were pretty close to me as well, that the weekly capture of this was problematic. It was going to cause all sorts of issues. It feels like monthly is just kicking the can down the road a little bit. You're not fixing the problem. You're just making it a little bit longer. Presumably, you'll still get it on reboot as well.
Yeah, I'd have thought so. I am running Sequoia back, but I haven't really fiddled with it a huge amount, I confess. But I don't know. I think I agree with you. I think their whole notifications thing needs some thinking about. I don't know how to explain it. They are Vistaizing macOS, which is something I thought they would never do.
No, and Gruber obviously complained about this too and has had a post since. He's been speaking to people internally, and apparently this is causing a lot of drama internal to Apple as well, between the security people who say you need this kind of stuff to know if you're being watched or you're being observed, or for all the reasons we talked about last week, and against the everybody else are going, but this is just crazy. I did hear John Siracusa on ATP talk about this briefly this week, saying the problem with this is actually the way these things are surfaced to the user. What you want is a allow forever in that sort of way, and then somewhere you can see the list of everything you've allowed forever, which is updated, and that fixes the problem, doesn't it? You know, so.
And he also talked around not doing it on a set time limit, but on a randomized time, so that if somebody was taking control of your machine without you knowing about it, they wouldn't know that they got to log in 30 days time and tick the box or click the button. And I think that is also a good idea. I think this one feels overly aggressive, and I don't think they've got the right balance.
I completely think they've got the wrong balance, and the always allow thing should definitely be a feature. This will drive you crazy for the very reason that you'll go to screen share for whatever reason, and you know this will be in your face, and you won't know what to do, and you'll click the wrong thing, and that's you screwed for your meeting, or your meeting with your family or whatever to talk about. Just everything about this is wrong for me. I get the edge case of people who are monitored and suffer abuse and forget what they've installed in their machines, and that's, I don't want to minimize that, but a better way of highlighting these things has to be found, because this isn't it. This is a problem.
I completely agree.
Fine. Moving on, Matt Birchler, who we've featured a couple of times from his Mastodon posts this week, over the last few weeks, has put another one that I thought was quite interesting related to this subject, and I'll read his toot. Random privacy thought. I have my wife permission, presuming means I gave my wife permission to see my location and find my many years ago. Ever since then, she's been able to see exactly where I am, and iOS has never reminded me once that she can do it, nor does it tell me when she's looking at my location. This seems to have all the problems the potential abuse cases Apple's new screen recording pop-ups are supposed to have. Should Apple add way more Are You Sure models for this then? And he's not wrong, is he?
No, he's not wrong. Look, we use this in my house. I can see where some of our parents are. I can see where my children are. They can see me. We do use Find My to track one of our family members that's got dementia. We've explained to him what we're doing. But yet, does he really know? Do you know what I mean? And it is really tricky. And we do use the AirTag as well. And I know they've tried, obviously, to tackle this problem with AirTags, because that's been problematic. And I think they've got to the right place with AirTags now. But he is right. If they're going to do this, they need to be consistent. Whereas they seem to, in macOS, just be picking this one screen recording thing, but they're not worrying about the location stuff. And I think there's got to be a better middle ground here somehow. And maybe it is. Every now and again, it just pops up randomly. And then after the fifth time, you can just go, look, this is fine. I'm good with it. Just leave me alone. Remind me in a year or something. I don't know.
Yeah. And of course, there's a difference with a party thing. This is Apple's design thing against what other developers are able to do. Because Apple don't want the blowback and this kind of stuff. And I get it from Carrot Weather and other things that I've installed. Even my Tesla app on my phone pops up every so often and goes, Tesla's been using your background for it since for the last XXXX. And that really annoys me because if I switch this stuff off, I can't get into my car. So, you know.
Yeah. And I've noticed it more with running the betas. Even with Apple's own stuff, it seems to be popping up more. I just put that down to betas. You know, I swear I've opened the App Store and it goes, do you want to let the App Store use your location? I'm like, yeah, it's fine. Crack on. And yet, it's then asked me again, but I think that's betas. So maybe they are doing something with that logic. I don't know.
Let's just hope that they either design the thing John Syracuse was talking about, or they allow, just add and allow forever Apple and let us deal with it the way we've been trusted to do over the last X number of years, certainly since the iPhone, for a lot longer with a Mac. You know, trust your users that they know what they're doing.
Yeah, and I don't disagree, a security dashboard area where you should go, and you should be prompted to go there once in a while and go, did you know you've allowed these apps this permission, which we think's odd, or you've you know, got these people that can see your location, just to let you know, kind of thing, you know, just so you can see it all in one pane would be a good idea.
Google does this on the web. It gives you sort of a web health thing where it talks about age of passwords and what you've signed into and when you last extracted your data and all that kind of stuff. If Google can do this on a website, surely Apple can do this, considering they've got complete control over all the platforms.
And there's some super smart people there that can surely make this work.
You would have thought so. Next story, from The Verge this time. We talked about Google being declared a monopoly last week, and this is sort of the people beginning to think about, what does that mean, really? That now Google's a monopoly, does that impact their search? Because it's Alphabet that's the monopoly, really, that has all these companies that they've got Google Search, they've got AdSense, they've got Android, they've got Gmail, they've got all the various elements of Google. YouTube, you know, there's some big companies when you think about it that's all part of the Google brand. And it's just the beginning of people thinking about, what does this mean? Do you have to split all these companies up into individual elements? Do you need to stop the payments? What does it mean? Because, and again, just to be really clear, it's not illegal to be in a monopoly. It's illegal to maintain, do all the things that Google does to maintain its monopoly. So it's really how they apply those changes now.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting, isn't it? Now, for me, I never really think of Google as being a monopoly because I don't really use a huge amount of their services, but I'm probably a massive outlier here, but and Rod is nodding for those that can't see it, but I completely agree, actually. Then when I started thinking about it, I was like, yeah, of course they've got Google Docs, they've got YouTube, they've got Google Search, they've got all this big stuff, Google Drive, obviously Gmail. 100% they've got to be a monopoly, haven't they? But then, so is Microsoft in some respects. They've got all the same sort of services. They obviously don't have YouTube, but they've got all the same sort of services that Google have in every other respect. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they're going to make them, was it tear down the barriers, I think is what I saw on the headline for this article.
Yeah, that's what they're planning to do, is to tear down the barriers. Because, if you think about it, they do all the same things Apple do. You know, they're paying companies hush money, effectively, to make them the browser of choice. We'll talk about the release of their new phones and things like that in the next later on. But how they maintain that monopoly for, you know, who they privilege in terms of YouTubers, what websites come along that they buy, what bits of hardware they're buying, or TensorFlow units for their maintenance of AI modeling and all that kind of stuff. They're doing all the things to maintain an up, and Apple is doing all this kind of stuff. If you look at the way it's using the App Store and the revenue streams and all that kind of thing. Microsoft have been through this, of course. Microsoft did have an anti-monopoly case. You know, what is it now? 20 years, 20 plus years ago now?
Yeah, it's possibly like 20 odd years ago for having the web browser.
And they didn't get broken up, although that was very much on the cards at the time, that they could have broken the Office suite away from the main operating system. And these days, I'd say Microsoft are even more dominant in that space, particularly they now have these kinds of web-based tools as well. And then you've got the whole Azure thing kicking around in the background as well. So, yeah, this is difficult, and you know, it was fairly ineffectual in the end towards Microsoft. Microsoft just started acting nicer, much as anything else, and I think they got a big fine.
Started acting nicer for a little while, but most of that's kind of gone away, hasn't it?
It has. I think I slightly worry that developers these days look more kindly on Microsoft than they do on Apple, frankly.
I wouldn't disagree with that statement.
Yeah, but it's interesting to think of a world where Android is separate from Google Search. What does that mean? When you launch up Android, does that offer you a different browser choice? Google products are so deeply baked into Android, Gmail, YouTube, you know, all those services that come along with Alphabet-type phones. It's really quite an interesting thing to contemplate.
Yeah, 100%. It's, like I say, interesting to see how they handle this, and then will they apply this logic to some of the other big tech companies? And it is the tech companies that have got their fingers in so many pies because they've got the money to do it. So, yeah, it could be interesting.
Yeah, so it is interesting what's going to happen here. And, you know, you see these monopolies throwing their weight around with, like, Epic Games and Fortnite and things like that, which both Google and Apple have got issues with.
Yeah, that is true. Google and Apple are in a similar place at the moment. They could be allies, I guess, and not being broken up.
Well, that's part of the problem. It's not so much a monopoly as a duopoly between these two companies who have complete control over one sector. If you think Apple and Google own the mobile phone sector, there is no competition in the mobile phone sector at all.
No, they squashed it quite successfully. I mean, there was Microsoft for a short glimmering piece of time and a little bit of Palm, but obviously they disappeared very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, did Microsoft's operating system ever make any sort of inroads at all? I'd say if it got to 6% of the market, you were doing quite well, frankly.
Yeah, it was not big. It had some good ideas, and it was quite an interesting time because you had very different OSs back then. I think Apple did theirs, Google did theirs, Microsoft had theirs, which was very list and text heavy, and Palm were doing theirs. Whereas, and if we cover it later, but we've actually converged into two very similar looking, feeling, and functionally similar operating systems.
Yeah, I mean, they do this. But that's not surprising. A developer needs to build generally something that works on both. So no matter what the underlying operating system of it is, it doesn't help that both vendors of the operating system have very much views on how you will develop apps on there, what privacy permissions you have, how much of a cut they're going to take out of you, all that kind of stuff. And it wouldn't, you know, you could imagine a world where you went around with a laptop all the time connected to a dumb phone and just use the websites to do all this kind of stuff. It would be vastly less convenient. I mean, you can get around with a bit. Hold on, I'm thinking about paying for parking now. Can you pay for parking on a website? I'm not sure.
Mixed is what I've seen. And I think some parking places get that right. They do a QR code. You can just scan the QR code, pay your £10, say, and off you go. Others do make you have an app. But I agree with you on this. I think basically where we've ended up is actually, and we'll probably talk about this when we talk about the Pixel event, we've actually ended up with both companies becoming very similar. They're releasing the same sort of tech with the same look and feel, the same functionality. It feels like we're losing innovation, but we're just copying each other every other month, which is something Apple covered. I think it was when they did Tiger, and they said, you know, Richmond, start your photocopies, as in come and copy all our new features. And it feels like that between Apple and Android.
Yeah, it would be nice. It is a shame that the Humane Pen and the Rabbit R1 didn't sort of move the needle a little bit on trying to do something new and different in the mobile space. And the problem is, you look at the landscape, and I'm not sure where the next thing comes from at this point, because these companies will squash anybody that looks like competition.
Yeah, that is the problem. The barrier to entry is so high now.
Are we hoping Microsoft actually sort of wakes up and makes their own phone now, and we'll all rush out and buy it?
I think they've tried that. They did the Surface Duo for a little while, didn't they, with Android on it?
They did, and they've had a few goes on mobile phones, haven't they? I mean, Windows CE back in the day, they obviously were on Nokia devices and Windows mobile devices, and you know, as you say, did they have something to do with the Sidekick as well? I can't remember. But it doesn't matter. I wouldn't trust Microsoft for my privacy on a mobile device.
Or to keep it going long enough with mobiles, whereas Microsoft historically keep things going for too long. Mobiles is an area where they've never really got it right, have they?
Yeah, this is true. Should we do our last story and follow up?
Yeah, let's do it.
So this is just related to Apple again, and we know they've been in legal hold over this too, is that they're finally allowing Spotify to display pricing and direct users to its website. So this is the anti-steering rules that Apple are very keen on, allowing developers to point that they could get a better deal somewhere else, relevant to Patreon maybe. You know, yeah, you can, believe it or not, visit Netflix.com and sign up to a Netflix account there, and then you'll be able to do it. Whereas if you fire up the app now, all you get is no information if you fire up Netflix on it. And it's ridiculous that Apple have got this attitude. It's unsurprising at this point, but it's ridiculous. Anyway, Spotify have complained bitterly about this to the EU, and now Apple are allowing it to happen.
The whole thing's bizarre. Like, I keep forgetting this is the thing. They can't show pricing. And then here we are in the news going, Spotify can never show pricing in their app. Like, bonkers. The whole thing about not allowing you to go to their website is hostile to the user. Just, if you're not going to let me take payment for it in a reasonable fashion, just let me link out to my website anywhere, anyhow I want, and be completely transparent about it. I just think the whole thing is bonkers.
And this doesn't allow you to link. It just says you can go here and this is what it costs. So there's no actual link within the app to take you out to go into the Spotify website. And this kind of stuff is just absolutely ridiculous. It's bad for Spotify. It's bad for Netflix. Kindle books, you can't, you know, you need to go to Amazon's website. And how are you meant to know that? It's just, it drives me crazy. Apple, wake up about this stuff. They want the 30%. I get it, but gosh.
You want the 30%, but you need to earn your 30%. If you're not doing a good enough service, then maybe you need to do something different because people aren't wanting to use your service, whereas you're forcing people to use it. So I just think they're winning because there's no other option in town, rather than they should be winning because it's the best option in town.
Yeah, and Spotify is a competitor in a couple of ways. Obviously, they want 30% off them, but also they make a rival music store. So that's why Apple are being particularly feet-draggy here, is they don't want people going off to another app store, music store. Spotify is objectively better. You know, I've used both of them. Spotify is much better at highlighting music that you want to listen to. Don't get me wrong, Apple Music does the job. It's fine. It's mostly fine. Occasionally, it doesn't want to play for me for whatever reason. There are always little sort of weird issues with Apple Music, which I never had in Spotify. The licensing model is better. The whole how many apps you can have signed into it, like, oh, my Spotify speakers and things like that. My Sonos speakers. When I had one Spotify account, I had a family Spotify account, but my account on my car, my phone, was signed in at the same one as the Sonos in my house. If my kids would go out and play something in the car, then it would stop playing in the house, and that used to drive me crazy. Never happened with Apple Music. Apple Music is just open enough that it can just get on with it. So there's some weirdness about that. But the app, and most people just use the app, is significantly better than Apple Music.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't doubt that. The biggest annoyance on Apple Music, occasionally you add like a best of into your library, and then it muddles it up with getting the songs off different albums. So you then, rather than just having the best of there, you end up with five albums with two songs on it each. And it's like, no, I just want the best of in my library. It does get confused sometimes, and that is the one thing that drives me bananas.
Yeah, it's definitely got some quirks about it. And Apple have got first-party advantage here. When you buy an iPhone, what you're steered towards going to the Apple One account, aren't you? Where all of these things come into it and then you just don't. And if you don't, you get nagged. Now, I am an Apple One user and have been for years, so I don't actually know what a lot of the nags are, with one staying in on settings and all the rest of it they see on other people's phones. That would drive me mental. I can't cope with the little unread counts on my app. I
completely agree, but a lot of people don't mind unread counts and just ignore them. That's what I've learned.
Yeah. Yeah, 10,000 unread emails and the rest, I get it.
Oh, I couldn't do it.
No. Should we do some news?
Let's do some news.
So, there's been a fair bit of unrest in the UK over the last few weeks following the very sad stabbing of some little girls in the north of England. What wasn't helping this was the app X, which is well known to us on this podcast. We've talked about it quite a bit. But fueling the fire of this was X allowing users that had previously been banned, such as Tommy Robinson, back into the app to be able to, I think the word is foment, it's not forment, to be able to foment violence and conspiracy theories about what happened in that awful event. But more than that, Elon himself has been retweeting and talking about things like, there's really no difference between the UK police force and the Nazi party and things like that. And you just think, that is spectacularly awful.
I completely agree. I mean, Elon's going to do Elon, isn't he? We know this. But it is bonkers. I keep forgetting X is a thing, if I'm honest, because I've just... Now you can't link to tweets, and obviously since Elon's had it, we both left. I've got no desire to go back. I am seeing the X appear a lot more in places, though. It does feel like that rebrand is slowly kicking in. But this story, though, I mean... I was reading a story the other day about Tesla's shares and how they're struggling now with Elon, not because what he's doing at Tesla, but because what he's doing outside of Tesla is having such a bad impact on him as a person and therefore his affiliations with other companies. I just don't know. Surely there's somebody sat next to him telling him, don't do it, you know, advising him and all of that, but he's just going to do his own thing because I think, and it has worked for him in the past, he's bigger than what anybody else says to him, and it's, you know, he's obviously become the wealthiest man in the world, but yet this is ridiculous, isn't it, that he's just doing this kind of thing?
It is. The result of this in our story is a third of UK users are considering leaving X, and not before time, frankly. I think they've very clearly shown the direction of travel. You and I exited, you know, a couple of years ago at this point, and it amazes me that people are still on here. But one in four people in the UK apparently still use X, even though they say, oh, it's got worse.
But I think people leaving a social media network, a lot of people say it, but for somebody to actually do it is quite another thing, I think.
Yeah, I agree. There are a lot of alternatives here in the UK. Facebook is no better at not bubbling people up into these kind of conspiracy theories, as far as I'm concerned, and WhatsApp obviously makes this easier. But I think when you've got the chief executive of the organization really underlying some of the most vile parts of what goes on Twitter, that's really the thing for me. And I agree with you. People saying they're going to do a thing isn't the same as them actually doing a thing and voting with their thumbs and hitting exit and leaving it. Or, you know, I'll step away for it for a couple of months and see what happens. I will say, in my day job, we stopped using X. I prevented us from tweeting anymore. It was a decision that I made. I don't know if it's actually cost us slightly in terms of what we get for followers and people knowing what's going on, but I felt we couldn't support the platform, and that was a decision I made.
Yeah, and I would support that, I think. Something fundamental needs to change there to go back to it, I think. You know, they need to get through this rebrand. They need Elon just to step back from day-to-day business, and they probably need a better CEO because the current one is more Elon's puppet.
Did you, and we're in danger of going off topic, and I don't really want to go very long on our first recording this morning, but did you see the Musk-Trump live event?
I did not. That sounds like something I do not want to watch because that would just make me very angry.
Well done for missing it. But what they did was a live meetup between Elon Musk and Donald Trump. I think it was last week, maybe 10 days ago at this point. It took 30 minutes to get it up and running with lots of technical problems because obviously they don't have anybody to help in the background anymore these days at X because Elon fired them all. They had a very freewheeling conversation, one of which the conversations went down to was Trump praising Elon for firing his workforce. He said he was one of the best at cutting in the US, which obviously you're not allowed to do. In the way that it does. So he has all the unions and things like that, you know, up in arms about this interview. It was a bit of a car crash, which isn't a surprise, and ironic for a man that owns a car company as well. So, you know.
Yes, well done, Mr. Business Leader. You managed to reduce your overhead very quickly and in not the correct fashion. Congratulations. Yeah. That's like two business leaders congratulating each other on their bonus. Do you know what I mean? It's just not something... It's very distasteful, isn't it, to the rest of the world that were impacted by that. And yet they were allowed to do it and talk about it publicly. And it's not what you want to see from a potential president candidate. Well, from a presidential candidate.
Yeah, an ex-president. What a platform to give him, you know?
Well, an ex-president and potentially a future president.
I don't know. Is he South African? He wasn't born in the United States, Elon.
No, I know. I meant Trump.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Right. Yeah, Trump, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's not unlikely that he'll be president again, is it?
Anyway,
let's not fixate on that. Yeah, let's talk about another Elon business. So this is a story in The Verge that AT&T and Verizon, two big mobile phone carriers in the United States, have got a problem with T-Mobile Starlink service. Basically, they don't like it at all. Starlink, which is low Earth orbit satellites, which is quite a cool technology in some ways. I really worry about the amount of space-borne pollution all these hundreds of satellites are giving us, sort of zipping around the planet all the time. Where you can get mobile phone and internet signal, well, initially just internet signal, when you were out in the middle of nowhere. So if you're backpacking, we've talked about a couple of the devices before, Ukrainians have used it as part of the war effort, I think Russians probably have as well at this point, but it gives you access to the internet at reasonable broadband speeds when you're in the middle of nowhere away from a mobile phone signal. Obviously, if Starlink are going to allow people to use space-borne mobile phone signal as well as internet signal, that's a problem for the existing providers, so they're not pleased with this.
Yeah, I can understand it, and it does feel to me, and like you, I'm pained to talk more about Elon, but actually Starlink has come out of nowhere. You know, they've slowly just, you know, cracked on in the background, and actually they are starting to eat, I think, some of the lunch of the cellular networks we're seeing here in the UK, where if you want a data connection and you're maybe have a building site in a green field, Starlink's a good option for you rather than using like a 5G, 4G cellular service. Actually skip that step and go straight to Starlink, because actually you'll get better connectivity with lower latency. So they've actually got a technically really good product, and I'm not surprised the cellular networks are getting worried, A, from the data standpoint, and then with T-Mobile doing this wrapper to them. And to be fair to T-Mobile, they all seem quite an innovative network in the States. They've gone now here in the UK, but in the States they actually seem to be doing these innovative things. And I wonder if the other networks are like, oh, we've missed a trick here. We should have partnered with them because this could eat our lunch.
And that is part of it. They're also saying potential technical problems of interference between the spaceborne network and what they've got, but then they probably would say that. And I'm not saying that they're wrong. You've got more bandwidth things out there. We know how microwaves can interfere with, you know, internal Wi-Fi networks and all that kind of stuff. So it's, you can imagine the huge amount of power being pumped by these satellites, and what's required for the fine calibration of a mobile phone network could well be a problem. So yeah, so maybe it's not only spaceborne junk, maybe it's atmospheric interference as well. But yeah,
yeah, it's the, interesting. Well, both are kind of invisible, aren't they? You've got the space junk that we can't see, but we know is out there, and I agree with you. It's getting to get worse, isn't it, with all these little satellites going up, and there's more and more and more. And then obviously, yeah, you've got all the radio waves and frequencies that you can't see, but it is a concern.
It is a concern. Let's not talk about Elon for a little bit. Let's talk about Apple and a surprising collaboration with Kim Kardashian. Did you see this one coming?
No, but I must confess, I've given up following the Beats brand of headphones, I think, because I did have a pair for a while, and then I've come away because they were very small and I struggled to get my massive head into them, and they were nice but small, and I do prefer the Apple owned ones. And I don't really know much about any of the Kardashians. I'm aware they are a force that exists and are worth squillions of thousands of hundreds of millions of dollars. Hopefully I got some number of those numbers right. But I'm just seeing a brown pair of Beats headphones, and that's enough for me, I think.
Yeah, so they're branded Kim X Beats, and they're sort of brown is the only way I can describe them. Beats headphones are perfectly fine. I think they make some good models on them. I slightly worry about their robustness compared to some of the Apple models. I've seen hinges and things go on them. I've seen the leather or pleather, whatever it is that's under your cups and things like that, break down quite rapidly. Both my kids got them with one back to school offer when we bought them Max. I had a couple myself from things that I'd got incidentally when I'd bought Apple equipment at work. They send them along anyway, and all of them to me have had reliability concerns. And I don't like this color, and I'm kind of with you on the Kardashians. I know they're a thing. They've got a TV show. I know that their father was involved with the O.J. Simpson trial. That's where some of their fame came from, I think. He was on the defense for the O.J. Simpson trial originally. And that's all I know.
Yeah, snap. I'm kind of with you here. And I don't know if I like it or I hate it, but there's a lot of brands where they do brand 1, X, brand 2 when they come together. That seems to be the popular way of showing that we've got two things coming together.
Apple of history here. We've had U2 iPods. We've had all sorts of things like that where they have collaborated with others. So this isn't very much of a surprise. And collaborating with people like, I can't remember his first name, the Jordan versions of Nike shoes. Michael Jordan?
Michael Jordan.
Obviously sells, you know, lifestyle equipment like this. So I don't blame them for doing it. Is there a real crossover between Apple fans and Kardashian fans? Clearly.
I guess in the fashion sector, Apple were going more down the fashion when they had their Burberry ex-CEO be their marketing, sales, retail person. But they seem to have moved away from that a little bit. But maybe this is how you stay current. You've got to be in with the celebs, I guess. I don't know. And what the trends are. But I'm surprised because they don't do a lot of them. I thought there'd be more people that they would do crossover with. But you could kind of say the same with Ted Lasso. They could have done some Ted Lasso headphones or something. Maybe the market's not big enough because it's on Apple TV Plus and not enough people take Apple TV Plus. So yeah, not a surprise, but these are going to just pass me by and I probably will never see any of them.
Do you think they get like a 4% cut out of the 30% cut on buying Apple headphones? What would the deal be? The Kardashians, to be fair to them, are very good at making money, as you've hinted at. So I got to think they've got their beans out of Apple.
It must be a challenging negotiation because you've got two very powerful money-making forces in the room, Apple and the Kardashians. So it'd be interesting to see how that conversation went. I'd be interested to know what the kickbacks are on this.
And the other thing is, do you associate your brand then? So let's say my observations, and it's just my personal observations about the reliability of Beats products, extend to this, and your Kardashian headset starts falling apart and the brown color starts peeling off it. Does that affect the Kardashians brand? Do they get upset about that? What's the reputational damage on a set of headphones?
Yeah, and it can be both ways, can't it? Because what happens, I guess, if the Kardashians, you know, join forces with Trump and Elon and then, you know, but you know what I mean, though? You've got them saying disparaging things that you as a business don't agree with. It's very tricky, I think, picking these relationships and sponsorship deals because you want somebody that's going to gel well with your brand. I assume it feels like the Kardashians don't make many mistakes because, like you say, they are a force to be reckoned with.
They've just got a loyal fan base. Yep. Yeah. Okay, let's move on. Just a little thing first on what the new NFC changes mean for the iPhone and other Apple devices with near-field communications chips on them. We know it only really at the moment for Apple Pay. We get your point-of-sale thing, we double-tap our buttons, or it triggers it automatically, you pay and you move on. But in iOS 18, it's going to be allowed to make payments, be used as car keys, be used as hotel keys and home keys, transit cards, corporate badges, student IDs, merchant loyalty and reward cards, tickets, and government IDs coming at a later date. So that's quite an expansive list now.
Yeah, that's all already there, though, isn't it? That's not new functionality in iOS 18. Those flavours of car keys, house keys, that's all been there. But now...
Has it? The car keys rely on Bluetooth and things like that as well. It's not purely on the NFC chip, right?
Yeah, you're probably correct in that statement. I should know because I use it, but I can't remember the technicalities.
Yeah, so there's a difference between it enabling near-field communication and Bluetooth LE communication and NFC communication for payment point-of-sale terminals and things like this. I think NFC is largely... You may be able to have been used it to trigger passive things like lights and things like that. You can get a few sensors and stuff, but not necessarily just be able to communicate via NFC any of these particular things, such as a student ID. That's my understanding. And other developers will be able to allow to tie into this, not just Apple.
Yeah, I think that's the big key, isn't it, there? Because I've used little NFC tags around my house. I've got one up here, so you can just put your phone next to it, turn the lights on kind of thing. So that is cool, and they are opening up to other developers after they did it in the EU, but they're now going to open up worldwide, which I think makes sense.
Yeah, and then our second related story is that, which is from Ars Technica, they'll let other digital wallets be the default, so Barclays potentially, for example, could create their own digital wallet to put in there. Or you could maybe even install the Google one if you wanted, if you trusted that more than Apple's.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that works. Is that going to take off? Because obviously a lot of people struggle just using Apple's one. It would be interesting to know, are people going to do this? So I'm glad they're doing it. I'm glad they are starting to open some things up, but it's too long.
And of course, open probably comes with a 30% service charge.
Yeah, well, there is that, how they're going to monetize it in the background so they don't lose any revenue.
Definitely. So that was our sort of sandwich with our light frothy filling, and then we're back to Elon. Elon also announced in Twitter this week, he released in Twitter this, sorry, X this week, his new image generation software, which there's not a lot of guardrails on. Most of these things, such as stable diffusion and all these things, will stop you from being able to put in political imagery, you know, racist comments, fascist remarks, you know, inappropriate sexual material and all the rest of it to generate your images. Grok, which is the name of this AI that Elon has and its image generation thing, has far fewer guardrails. And the image from the Verge article is Mickey Mouse sitting in a MAGA hat, smoking a fag and having a pint. So that's not something Disney would be terribly happy with, I'm sure.
No, there's a lot of problems here. Firstly, can we just cover off the name? So X, as in Twitter, has got a new AI image generator, but it comes from a company called XAI, which obviously Elon's carrying on with his X's. And then, yeah, the image generator is called Grok. But no, this is, it's just fraught with problems, isn't it? That they can take material like Mickey Mouse that is copyrighted and, you know, well-known people and put them in scanty clad clothes and it will just generate you an image. Like, this is just going to pour more fuel on the X fire, is it not?
As you scroll through the article and you see things like create an image of Bill Gates sniffing a line of cocaine from a table with a Microsoft logo, and it does look a bit like Bill Gates, I got to say, or, you know,
yeah,
Barack Obama holding a knife towards Joe Biden. Yeah, it's going to cause some problems.
Mickey Mouse holding a gun next to Elon, like, brilliant. What is the... what good's going to come of this? This is awful.
It is awful.
I'm sure there'll be some funny, genuinely funny things that are harmless, but this is all, this, you just know the audience on that platform will misuse it.
Totally. Last story, and back to one of my favourite topics of horror. There's been a massive data leak that includes personal data of every person in the US, UK and Canada. That's a lot of people.
That's a huge amount of people. Apparently, 2.7 billion records.
Yeah, the data set, which is called National Public Data, collects and sells personal data for the use in background checks by private investigators and others. It's 2.7 billion records.
It's ridiculous, isn't it? I love that it's called National Public Data. It literally is national and public now.
Yeah, it's great.
Right, and international, you know, and public, I guess, is she's the right word.
Three of the 10 biggest economies in the world, I think you've got there, with all the all their citizens' data floating around the internet. Great.
It's not good, is it?
Really not good. Anyway, this just adds to our continual realization that your data is just out there at this point. You can do whatever you want with it. You're probably your finances and everything. So yeah, not great. Really bad look though. And what's the consequences of this? Where's the Information Commissioner's Office? Where's the United States and Canadian allegories for all those agencies to actually get out there and fine the people that have not protected this data in such a robust way?
Yeah, it's with a data set that big, you should have had better checks and balances in place, especially for somebody to leak the whole lot. That's not good. I must confess, I have signed up for Delete Me, which is just for 12 months to try it out, and it's meant to go off and delete your details off the internet. I haven't got anything to report back on it yet, but I've only had it for a week or two. I'm waiting for the first report, but I'm curious to see what will that service do. Will that help in scenarios like this or not? So I will feed back in that. But maybe a service like that actually could start becoming quite popular if these leaks keep happening.
I would be interested. My feeling with services like that is that they probably work for a little bit, but all that underlying information is still out there in things like this. So next time they load the data set in, it's just going to pop up again. So it's going to be wow.
Which is why they want you to sign up for a 2-year subscription.
Yeah, they do. They want their money as well.
I'm trying it because I thought it'd be a good experiment. It annoys me how many people cold call me. But I will report back on that. But I wonder if they will capture things like data leaks, or do they just go after the main, sales list that get, sold around from one company to the next.
Good luck. Should we do some media?
Yeah, let's dive in.
So last week I said I'd finished Clarkson's Farm Season 1. This week I've started Clarkson's Farm Season 2. I'm 3 episodes in. Yeah, it's still really good. Thoroughly enjoying it.
Season 2 is actually pretty good. If I remember correctly, it's got a restaurant theme to it. You may not have got to that bit yet, but it's really good season. I think my kids and I enjoyed that one the most.
Yeah. So far, so good. Caleb is becoming more of a character, which he will. But things have happened in his life, and so I think they're allowing him to show himself a little bit more than they did. He was sort of just a butt of jokes before, whereas now he's actually he's allowed to be the person he is, I think.
Yeah, I think in the first one he was like the hired help, and then in the second one he's more of a character. He's more of a constant. Rather than just being a reoccurring character, he's now one of the main characters. And he obviously, after season one, went down well with the general public, I think, and therefore they gave him a bigger part in season two and again in season three. So it is great. I think season one was good. You established the premise of everything. And then season two, to be fair, I think just builds upon it in a really good way.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'm thoroughly enjoying it, so that's good. It actually inspired me to go off and watch the Top Gear Vietnam special again. I'm sort of looking at Jeremy Clarkson in a slightly more pleased light than I have been lately.
That's when they race boats, is it not, across the Vietcong? No?
Nope. That was the second one, I think.
Oh, okay.
This was when they bought scooters in Ho Chi Minh City, I think, and they went across Vietnam. It's a really good one, because Clarkson's very known to be anti-bike, and as the ex-biker, I looked down on him for that. So yeah, no, fair play. He bought a Vespa and he drove mostly across Vietnam, but yeah, a lot of fun.
Yeah, okay. There's so many Top Gear shows. It's the back catalogue's huge.
But who knew almost all of that was on the iPlayer?
I did, but it always annoys me that it's not very hard to navigate on the Apple TV. They just give you, here's 155 episodes, scroll through it. It's like, oh.
And also, they're very low definition. There's nothing the BBC could do to make them look a little bit better.
Sure, they could point some AI stuff at it to manipulate it into 4K.
Elon had sorted it out for them. The second thing I watched this week, also on the BBC, was the first episode of the Celebrity Edition of Race Across the World, which was really, really good. They're in South America this time, and I just thought it really is just as compelling as the everyday people one.
Agreed, and it felt like the cinematography had got even better. I don't know what they're using to capture some of the shots, or they got better drones and better cameras. It just looked amazing. And their titles, they do always look great, where they show you, day 4, and then they have a car drive round one letter, but then through another one. It's just very clever how they do all of that. I think their production values are really good on that show.
It's a well-made show, and I got to say, the choice of celebrities I'm quite enjoying as well. There's one guy, I don't know who he is, Brazier. I don't know who that is, but the rest of them I know, and they were good.
Yeah, he was married to the lady who was in Big Brother, and he had children with her, and then she passed away really young. Jade Goody or
Jade Goody.
Yeah. That because I asked my wife the same question. I was like, I don't know who this guy is, but actually, I think it's quite a good dynamic. They all come across quite well. You've got different ages, different sexual orientations, different couples, just really good pairings. I wonder how much work they do on finding the celeb and then another to go with them, and you know how much screen testing they have to do to see if it's going to work, and have they got the mental stability to go for, you know, a month in quite challenging conditions sometimes, because you know you've got to rough it, you've got to get on buses, da, 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 da. So I think it's fantastic. My kids enjoyed it, and it's a very tight hour. I think, you know, I'd hate to think how much footage they film to get an hour's worth, because obviously they're following four or five couples, or sorry, not couples, but pairings, you know, on their travels. They must have to film a huge amount of footage, and a lot of it's going to be dull, but occasionally I guess there's some good bits.
I went skiing in February. I still haven't edited that because it's so much footage I've got to get through. Have you got anything else in media?
No, it's been a very dry week here. I apologise.
Fair play. Games, one thing to mention. You and I both quite like the company Valve. We've really enjoyed some of their output in the past, such as Portal, Portal 2, Half-Life, Half-Life 2, the sort of various episodes around that. Team Fortress, Team Fortress 2. They make some great games. I think Defense of the Ancients is there now as well, and some of those sort of mobile type games too. But anyway, a new one has appeared in beta. It's called Deadlock, which is a sort of cooperative team versus team shooter in the style of sort of a Counter-Strike or a Team Fortress Classic. There's a few beta testers got hold of it. Seems to be going down quite well. Yeah, fantastic, Valve. It's good to see you're still making games. I was a bit worried there.
Yeah, they obviously got more into the platforms and less into the games, haven't they? Even though they made all their money from games to begin with. Quite smart of Valve, to be fair, to pivot, I guess, into doing this into Steam and everything. But no, this game is great to see. It looks quite cool, actually. Got some neat concepts. Yeah. I'm watching a guy fly on a zipline at the moment.
These sort of 6v6 shooters sort of pioneered by, well, Team Fortress was the one, really, which I don't know if you played back in the day, but or even Counter-Strike. I know you played, but that one team versus the other team where you're all friends and you work against each other for a thing has really become something with Overwatch particularly, which is a Blizzard game, so I'm surprised you hadn't tried that really, because I know you're a big fan of their work.
I do love Blizzard, but I'm less keen on playing on the Tinternet.
Oh well.
Just because I get murdered in 5 seconds, that's why I don't play online.
I know, I can never get you to play COD. Anything else in games?
Nope, sorry.
Right, let's do a quickish main show. So we said last week, just as we'd started recording, that this Patreon debacle had started, and immediately it caused problems. So this was Apple saying that within the iOS app, for new customers to iOS, they would be taking 30% from Patreon to make their get the 30%, as we repeatedly talk about. This caused a huge amount of fallout with creators, because you're taking money directly off the people who probably can't afford to have that 30% taken off them. All Patreon could do would be to increase their prices to a certain degree, so they'd be able to obviate that 30%, but obviously that means you're paying a lot more to give those people money. Now, you can go to the website, you can go to other places to support the artists and creators that you want to support using Patreon, but I think, given the audience, quite a lot of them are Apple users. They use MacBook Pros, they use iPads, they make their calls and record their videos with iPhones, so you're causing an issue straight away with the kind of people who influence your products or cause people to buy your products. And that just felt very wrong-footed. And a lot of people complained about this, as we talked about last week. And again, we bring him up a lot because he's sort of more of an Apple shill than a sort of objective person who looks at what Apple are doing. But Gruber was not impressed with this either. And I think I've summed that up properly. Yeah, is that fair?
No, I think that is fair. I think, yeah, Apple again just seem to want to constantly poke bears for relatively small amounts of money for them. The whole thing is just crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. So Steve Troughton-Smith has helpfully put up a little. He's quite the good commentator himself these days, Steve Troughton-Smith. He's not the guy who goes digging around in iOS betas to tell us what's in there these days. How much this actually costs? So if you're a founder, which is Patreon's original plan for people who joined before 2019, 5% of the income you earn from Patreon would go into this plan. So 5% of your income. That's not huge, but it is a decent chunk to have that pulled out of the system by Apple. If you were a pro, a core set of tools, 8% of the income you would earn from Patreon goes to it. And if you're in premium, which is dedicated coaching and support plus premium features, 12% of the income you earn on Patreon would come out of that payment. Oh, sorry. This is all plus payment processing, encouraging conversion, payout fees and applicable taxes. That's quite a lot of money. If you earn all of your living from Patreon and YouTube links and things like that, and Apple come along and carve out that chunk of what's going on, you're losing quite a lot of your income.
Yeah, so Apple are going to make six times as much as Patreon if they go through with this, which is just bonkers. Patreon are doing all the work. I know Apple have, you know, engineered the iPhone, engineered the App Store, but come on. I mean, you're just picking money off everybody. It is ridiculous. I did see, I think it was a tweet from somebody saying, Apple, I've just built a website on my Mac. I'm surprised you're not taking some revenue off me for this work I've done for, you know, another company. And they're taking, why are they not taking a percentage of that? Which Apple just seems to have got themselves in a really confused corner of what they take money for and what they don't, and they're pushing it too far.
They are. It feels very out of balance now, and that's a really good sort of allegory for what they're doing. You can use your to do all sorts of creative things, and it does feel like they want to charge. If we made any money off this podcast, it feels like they'd want to charge us for making any money off this podcast, despite the fact we bought more software to do it, webcams, microphones, yada yada yada. But because we both create it on a Mac, it feels like they'd want 30% from us just for the part of doing this, despite the fact that we could do this in Windows, we could do this in Linux, we could do this in whatever the hell else we wanted. We choose to use an Apple platform because it's been, well, it's our platform of choice, and the tools are really good because the dedicated developers and people who care about the platform have come along and made excellent software. All the bits and pieces we need to do this easily, and I edited it on Apple tools and all the rest of it, but it feels like they'd won that 30% off us for doing that too. No?
I completely agree. I'm surprised not taking a chunk of my salary because I use my iPad all day, every day at work. Why are they not taking a chunk of that on top?
Well, you know, that you should maybe not joke about that. We use a tool at work called Anaconda. Anaconda is a joining up of a bunch of open source products into a nice package that you can install, and installs Python and R and some Visual Studio Code and all sort of dependencies and things you'd need to do that. And its primary use is for research and analysis. You use it for loading data sets in, and you carry analytics on that. You do your, you know, all the various things that we do as part of work when we're putting together research papers and seeing if data makes sense and all the rest of it. And they've started charging universities for installing that, whereas it was always free before. So it's an American company that is aggressively going after universities for daring to install this on the open version of this on their computers and servers. And you can imagine how many universities make use of stuff like that, as well as financial industries, companies, and all the rest of it. Anybody who does big data analytics uses something like this. Now, you can install all these components yourself individually. Many of them are already built into a Unix-based or Linux-based system. But for Windows particularly, it's a little bit harder to get Python and R and all these things running. So it's quite a nice package to put it together. They don't want their money. And this feels like the same sort of thing. Apple is doing hangabout. You're being creative on our platform. You couldn't be creative without our platform. Therefore, you owe us cash. And that's very much in the forefront of this Patreon stuff.
Yeah, it's just, where Apple are you going to stop? I just find it completely bonkers. But yeah, I'm just so frustrated with the whole thing at this point. I just don't get it. They used to be the company that inspired creatives, and they were proud of the work people did on their devices. Now they're upset that they're not getting income from every possible stream. So I don't understand it.
I'm quite with Gruber here. So Gruber is saying Patreon should call Apple's bluff and just say, Apple, go away and just stop using, you know, the iOS within the using iOS as a collection methodology for this, and see what happens, basically, because there would be such blowback from so many creative people that I genuinely think Apple would shift the perspective on this.
Hopefully. I wonder how much the app's actually used. That's the thing, isn't it? Like, how much of Patreon's income is this? You know, is it 50% of what they've got coming in, or is it way less? It's so hard to know. It's a tricky game to play, isn't it?
It is a tricky game to play, but at the same time, Apple is very much in the view of every regulator in the world at the moment. Department of Justice, the EU, you know, our regulators in the UK, they're looking for these kinds of things. Spotify whinge immediately all the anti-steering stuff that they were doing within the app.
Yeah.
If these creators were to stand up, that's only going to draw the attention even more regulators. And Apple surely don't want even more regulatory scrutiny on something that should be an easy win for them.
I'm amazed the EU haven't chimed in on this one. I don't know. It seems with all this stuff that EU have made Apple do quite successfully, by the sounds of it, you know, they have made Apple do a lot. But yet, this seems to be now going through, and that surely at some point the EU, you know, in a year from now, might turn and go, actually, no, you can't do that anymore. And then will Patreon come back on? You know, assuming Patreon goes away off of iOS. So it's just very odd that they're picking the time to do this now when they've had to concede so much other space, you know, so much other technicalities on in the EU. And surely that's only going to come to other markets. So it all seems very bizarre to me what they're doing here. They're in one hand, they're smiling and waving at the EU. Yep, we've done everything you want. And then on the other hand, they're doing this and creating a rod for their own back, you know, a year down the line or whatever it may be.
They don't seem to have that perspective anymore. As we've lamented multiple times, that they could get in front of so much of this stuff.
Yeah, and they could have come out easily being the good guy. But yet, every time they just want to continue being the bad guy. And I get they're trying to make revenue, and they're a business. I get it. But equally, you can make good money, and they've demonstrated that by not being evil. That was Google's line, wasn't it? You know, but yeah, Apple seems to be going that way, but yet trying to tell all their customers, we're amazing, we're the most holistic company, we've got all the best privacy, we do all the right things, we're doing the good for the environment, but yeah, we're doing bad by people.
We're doing good for the environment, but we don't really talk about the iPhone in that conversation. You know, we talk about the more marginal products where they can look good, and it's greenwashing. I firmly believe it's greenwashing at this point. It is interesting if you sort of scroll through some of the comments on Gruber's toot to his article, that it comes back to what Cory Doctorow has said in the initiatification of platforms. Again, hopefully that doesn't lose us our clean tag. Businesses can't survive without reaching Apple customers, and that's the worry for all of these things, is that Apple customers have credit cards built into the system, and if they don't get access to those customers, the business can't survive. And that sort of walled garden that we've talked about repeatedly on this show applies just as much to the businesses as it does to us as consumers within it. We can't see out to get the customers, the businesses can't see in to get us, and Apple puts up every single brick in that wall to stop it happening, and it's just very sad.
Yeah, it is, and Apple knows it, don't they? And until legislation forces them otherwise, they're going to keep putting more bricks in that wall.
But all they do is they look at the 30% that they're able to cream off the top of every single one of these transactions and just thinks this is easy. That's why our revenue share grows every month, every year, every quarter.
And it's all nicely hidden under services, so you don't know that what they're taking in commissions and what they're actually taking in services.
And they're potentially going to have that $20 billion not from Google next quarter, so that, you know, that needs to be in there.
Yeah, they are plugging that gap, aren't they?
Moving on, another gap that they're not plugging is the Alt Store. So Alt Store Pal is one of these app marketplaces. There are a few of them, including, three of them immediately, but there are three or four of them, including the Set app. Set app was the other one, for example, where you could pay a monthly subscription and get a lot of useful apps alongside of it. Alt Store is the most notable one because of its developer launching with the Nintendo emulator, Riley Testalt. This alternative app store is apparently now going to get an annual subscription grant from Epic, so you won't have to pay your $1.50 ongoing revenue charge, which is amazing.
This is great for Alt Store, isn't it? They were doing Alt Store for years, just beaving away in the background as an alternative store, hence the name. And it was not easy to install. And then obviously they've jumped on the EU changes in legislation, got their marketplace out there, and then Epic have come along and go, you know what? We'll pick up the tab for that for everybody, so you don't have to, you know, take £1, what was it, €1.50, and we then put our games in your store. Like, it's just fantastic, isn't it? Like, it's actually quite a good story. That Epic have probably come out of this with a good bit of PR.
It serves their ends. They want you to put Fortnite on your phone and your iPad and buy V-Bucks or whatever it is to play Fortnite. I'm fine with that. They should be allowed to do that.
Yeah, no, but it's just fair play, though, to Epic. They could have just gone and made their own marketplace, but actually they've used Alt Store to do it, and then, you know, they're helping Alt Store out. Like, it just seems like a really good story. I don't know, I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, and if we can get a valid competitor to the app store that works well, that lets people install software they want to have on their devices at a reasonable enough scale, then that proves to regulators and other that this DMA that the EU in is actually valid, that it can actually, even if it's only a couple of percent of difference,
yep,
as long as they've got an ongoing revenue stream where big games and apps people want can be installed and used, and you let people use the devices in the way that they want to use them rather than how Apple decides they want to use them, even though they've paid for them up front. I think I agree with you, it's a good thing.
I think it is really good. Like I say, and it was a story I didn't see coming. I did not see that Alt Store, when it launched the marketplace, you know, 6 months down the road, Epic would be picking up their checks. So I think it's good.
And just to finish this story off, Fortnite is obviously now available on the iPhone again. So you can play Fortnite, Rocket League, and Fall Guys via your phone. And Fall Guys is a lot of fun. I've got it on my PlayStation. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, my youngest son's just got his iPhone, and it's not a new one. It's a very old one. But he's like, so can I play Fortnite? No. Why can't I play Fortnite? I don't understand. My mate who's got an Android phone can play Fortnite. Why can't I play Fortnite? And then you then start entering into this conversation with a 10-year-old. It's quite challenging to explain because it just doesn't make any sense, because he's just going, but why? I don't understand.
Yeah, it's a bit strange. Moving on, Google had a Pixel 9 launch event last Monday. Do you want to tell us about it? Last Tuesday.
Yeah, I was going to say Tuesday, but we ended up on Monday. Do you know what? I had a look at this. So I watched, there's a link to The Verge. They've got a 20-minute clip that summarizes it. Because initially, I started watching the 20-minute clip, and I forgot I'm watching something that somebody else has spliced together. So you start watching the clip and say, oh, whoa, Google did that really quick. And then, it's just the 20-minute breakdown. So I would recommend anybody interested go and watch the 20-minute clip. But interesting, it's called the Google Pixel event, but I was expecting it to be all on the hardware, but it's not really on the hardware at all. It's all about the software. That's what really sprung out to me. But this was what I alluded to at the top of the show, I think, when I was watching this, and I obviously don't use Android on a regular basis at all and barely see it, but it was super interesting to watch this video. And to me, it struck me a little bit of Apple doing WWDC and what is going to be Apple's iPhone event in September, kind of smushed together into one show, but just branded Google, because there was a lot of talk about AI features and they've got some truly cool stuff in there. And then a little splattering of some hardware, you know, liberally sprinkled in with their three main product lines. But it made me feel a little bit sad in a way, because it looks to me, and we're going to the details in a minute, but it looks to me a lot like Google's copying Apple's hardware. You know, if you look at the devices they've got the phones, the watches and the buds. And there are some definite improvements. Google have done their own take, but the phones actually look very similar. And the watches are heading that way, just they have a round screen. And then on the software side, it felt like Apple is just copying Google with how they're doing some of the interfaces for the generative AI features that they've announced in iOS 18. It just felt a bit sad to me that both companies, whilst doing things a little differently, are to a point a mirror copy of each other. You know, I was just worried there was a lack of innovation, if I'm honest. Even looking at the watch OS, it's just like, actually, that just looks... Whilst it's round, some of it just looks very Apple-esque, or maybe Apple took it from Android. What did you think about just the similarities between the two?
It's not a surprise to me that they've done this for a little while now. Since the Pixel line has come along, they've offered comparable-ish phones. They go blow hot and cold on tablets a little bit,
yep.
But there's always been a phone, some home devices, they've got some earbuds and all the rest of it. Google have done this, and it's their commitment to this that's a bit different this time. They've had phones and earbuds and things like that in the past. They get bored of it after 5 minutes and they stop doing it. But the recent change in 7 years of software updates and a consistent cadence for releasing Pixel phones or earbuds or watches is new, I think, for them, that they seem a lot more determined about it. I'm with you. I think the hardware is good. But given the whole duopoly conversation we've just had, it doesn't surprise me. They need their own competitor to stand up to Apple's. But keep in mind, this is just one element of Android. People are more likely to have a Samsung phone than they are a Pixel phone. So I'm not surprised that they sort of, as the vendors of the operating systems, copy each other and the kinds of things that they do. I agree with you. It was odd the first 30 minutes of this actual presentation didn't mention the hardware. It was all about the AI. 30 minutes just talking about AI. Because that's the thing Google can really turn the handle on. They don't need to rely on a ChatGPT. They don't need a crippled version of whatever that Apple Intelligence thing that's genuinely made no difference to my day-to-day life and my iPhone since it's been on there. They can talk with us. And it's interesting. It's been interesting. I don't want to go too long on this because I'm conscious we're trying to keep the show short. But it's been interesting. People have actually had a chance to play with the new Gemini voice assistant. It's how conversational it is. They're trying to get it to shut up a lot of the time when they ask it to say something. It just keeps babbling on. And the guys from Google were telling people, no, tell it to shut up. So oh, right, that's okay. A real change in how you use a device, isn't it?
Yeah, I just thought I've never really watched a Google event in a long time. So I just thought it was super interesting. I started watching it, and like I said, I watched the 20-minute cut-down version. And it was just like, whoa, okay, this I could be looking at an iPhone right now, was what was going through my head. If he didn't have the little round camera in the top and in the island that we've got, that was, to me, the glaring difference. But it was a good show, and it it does make me think, I wonder how Apple's going to pitch AI features come September when they announce the new phones, because their AI story just isn't quite there yet. Now, what was interesting is Google did have a scenario where the AI didn't work for a period of time, and there was a big applause when they did get the demo finally working. Interestingly, they've gone for a live interaction rather than, you know, pre-canned, which I found interesting that they did that, because in some ways it's good that you can see the tools actually working, but obviously when they had this demo go wrong, it was like, oh no, that's gone wrong. Anyway, but why don't we get onto the equipment? So I thought the phones looked great. They looked very Apple-esque, you know. And I've got the white phone. A lot of the Google ones were shown in white. They've got some colourful non-Pro phones. They've got a regular size Pro and a bigger Pro. They look great. But what got me, though, was the Fold, the Pixel 9 Fold. That thing. Yes, I want that, please. I'd love to see Apple do it, but I worry if they're struggling, because when you open it up, is that just going to be iPad OS? Or are they worried they're going to cannibalise their iPad market? I really don't know on this one, but the hardware to me looked really good quality. Fantastic.
I'm with you, and I think the price is very good as well. So let's run through what they announced. They announced the Pixel 9 and a bigger Pixel 9. So Pixel 9 and a bigger one. Pixel Pro, not Pixel 9 Pro, and a Pixel 9 Pro XL. And then the Pixel 9 Pro Fold. The names aren't great, I've got to say. But they start at sort of $799, and they go up to sort of, well, $1,500, $1,600 for the folding phone, which is fair enough. It's got a lot more screens, I think, than what's there before. I think these are all very solid phones. They've got all very good cameras. I like the fact there's no camera distinction between the two Pro phones. You just get a bigger one with a slightly bigger battery, or the smaller one, whatever fits in your pocket. None of that nonsense that Apple makes you get the biggest, most expensive phone to get the hardware that you want. I would rather have a smaller phone this year, I gotta say. I didn't want the bigger phone this year, but to get the best camera, that's what I had to get. So, and I think the ProRes video recording was only on the bigger phone as well, so there are hardware distinctions between, you know, Apple devices, and Google aren't doing that.
Apple's mix when they do that, though, that sometimes happens, sometimes doesn't. But again, you said about Google, you need some consistency sometimes so people know what they're getting.
Yeah, you do. Do you want the bigger one or the smaller one? You get the same feature. Perfect. That's all you want.
Agreed.
G4 Tensor chips within them, so they're going to be faster. And I got to say, the G2 Tensor that my Pixel 7 is a perfectly great chip. It's I don't notice it being slow at any particular point, so these will be good chips. But I'm with you, and as are the reviewers, this Pixel 9 Pro Fold seems to be the foldable phone everybody has wanted. The screen fold in it isn't very noticeable. The outside screen is amazing. The inside screens are incredible. And the consistency of software when you open it up is meant to be fabulous. And the bezels just look almost perfect on it. It does look like the perfect foldable phone. It really does.
I agree. You just mentioned there the G4 chip. And it was when I started seeing that in the videos, like, this does feel like an Apple event talking about the A whatever chip or the M whatever chip. And they did the same with the headphones. And that's why I started thinking, this is just like Apple. Why don't people name things their own way? You know, they just all copy each other. And what got me, though, around the hardware specs was they were actively talking about the amount of RAM that came in it, and that they've increased the amount of RAM, which is probably due to the LLMs. And then they've got a vapor chamber for cooling, which I thought was interesting that they talk about that. And I know Apple mentioned it when they did the iPad a little bit on how they're going to cool it. So I thought that was super interesting. Like I said, I've already mentioned the demos. And then finally on the watch side, so they're going to do two sizes of watch, the round watch. I've actually come round to, I think maybe Apple got the watch screen the right by doing the square with rounded edges rather than the circle, because the circle screen did look a little cramped for using it for this sort of, you know, for more information. But for me, the OS on the phone, like I say, just to me looked like an Apple Watch. Yeah, very similar. Maybe Apple have gone Google's way or vice versa, but just looked very similar. But the one hardware feature they had I thought was interesting was loss of pulse. I don't know if you saw this.
I did see this.
But that looked like a great idea. Oh, look, you've got no pulse. Let's phone the emergency services. Like, genius. Like, why wouldn't you do that? It just seems like a no-brainer. So it'd be interesting to see whether Apple do that. But that, to me, I thought was a very clever hardware innovation.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's good to see solid updates, what people want from Google, and the security of knowing that the software is going to be supported for as long as it is. I genuinely would be looking at that foldable phone thinking that could be something I could use.
Yeah, I did like the look of that. So it's good. And I think you're right, where they're now doing the Cadence, hopefully people are coming back around to Pixels, because Samsung do the Cadence. Every year we announce stuff and Apple do it. And I think Google have gone, right, if we're going to be serious, we've got to get on that annual train. And it's great to see them doing it.
Absolutely, absolutely. So more thoughts on that over the couple of, over the coming weeks as they actually get into reviewers' hands and we see what they're like. But I think sort of the initial takes on them were very good. And Marcus Brownlee did, I think he only had 20 minutes with the devices, but he was showing off the camera. And that's really quite an impressive camera on the pro devices.
Oh, okay, I haven't seen that. I just watched this, but I'm curious to see it. And for me, I think actually, if I wasn't on the Apple train, I'd be pretty happy with those Android devices. They looked amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And they'll be very heavily discounted quite quickly as well. In fact, I think I've seen up to 20% discounts already on Hot UK deals on some of these devices. You can get a lot of device for your money.
Wow, yeah, that is impressive.
Yep. App of the week.
Do it.
So I've been using a thing called Portainer, which will mean nothing to you, Chris, so I'm going to very quickly explain it. There's a technology called Docker, which is a means of running, they're not virtual machines, but instances of containerized operating systems on side of a server or your own computer. So you can spin up things very, very quickly. It's very text-based. If you're quite good with your terminal, you can get things up and running. You can be very descriptive about what you want. I want Alpine Linux with the LAMP web service with these ports open here, and they're obviously very secure and portable because you can define in text exactly the machine that you want running with what services are on there, what passwords are in there and everything. It's really quite clever. Portainer is a graphical interface for working with that. So it's effectively a dashboard where you can have these text scripts, Docker Compose scripts saved within it, so they're always portable, so you can spin them up again. You can manage updates. You can have an idea how much processor it's impacting on your system, how much resource it's taking up. It's just a really nice, efficient way, open source as well for the community edition, of managing your Docker containers on your server. I've very heavily Dockerized a bunch of stuff this week to the extent I managed to actually turn off my virtual machine. I've just got it running in an old thing, and I've got 15 or 16 Docker images running on what was my Proxmox virtual machine, and it's beautifully. I'm very pleased with it so far. So a big shout out to Portainer for making that a lot easier for me.
This is a world I know not a lot about, I must confess. Like, listen to you, I was just clicking through the website. So it looks cool, but a world that has passed me by, I must confess.
Yeah, well, I just mention it for those. If you're starting to play with Docker, and you should, if you're at all IT related at all, you should have a vague understanding of what Docker is, because it's really quite transformational. If you're from the old school of I write code and I'm not sure how it's going to run, Docker can make it run consistently. And that's quite a big deal. If you write your website or you write whatever, you can just pass the Docker container on with everything running within it and ensure it's updatable and all the rest of it. In the early days, it had a lot of security concerns and things around it, but it is the way these days of deploying applications.
Yeah, I'm very much aware of it, and it certainly has matured over time. And as somebody that's had to port code from one company to another, it is not an easy process. So it does make sense, if you're going to be doing that, that you do it in this contained environment.
But even for something like I've talked about before, like pie holes and things like that, where you want that network sync, which will manage all your incoming ads and things into your home network, you can run them in a Docker container. It makes your life for managing these things an awful lot easier than it would be otherwise.
Yeah, it does make sense. Just something I just haven't got the headspace for, I guess, to pick up in my home life.
There you go. Thing of the week.
So thing of the week for me was Speed, the film Speed, which I'm fairly confident you've seen. It did not dawn on me. It's A, 30 years old, which was just insane. B, everybody looked very young. But D, I sat down and watched it with my kids, and my kids actually quite enjoyed it. It was all right. Do you know what I mean? It's aged okay. It's quite good cinematography. It's an interesting-ish story to a point. Obviously, it's a bus that can't go less than 50 miles an hour, otherwise it will help. But my kids were watching, and they were actually quite enthralled, because sometimes you show them an older film, and it's too slow, and there's not enough action, and da-da-da-da-da. But actually, they really enjoyed it. So there you go. We watched Speed this week.
It's a great film. Love it. Keanu at his best, and Sandra Bullock as well.
Yep, correct. And Alan Ruck from
Alan Ruck Ferris is in it. And Dennis Hopper. Dennis Hopper's a bad guy.
Obviously, Dennis Hopper. And I can't remember what the other cop's called out of Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah, one of the... Oh, God.
If only one of us had put the Wikipedia link in the thingy. Jeff Daniels, thank
Bridges.
You very much.
Daniels, I want to say Bridges, but it's Daniels, isn't it? Yeah.
But you know what? I can't believe it's 30 years old, but B, did age actually surprisingly well. So would recommend giving it a rewatch if anybody's keen.
It's a great film. I watched it 2 years ago, I think, with my kids, and they had the same sort of feeling about it. So yeah, very good. I think we can call that a show, Chris.
I think that's the show. If anybody would like to get in contact, Rod is at g5maniac@mastodon.scot. I'm at _cgp@mastodon.social. You can watch us on YouTube by going to our website, wakefromsleep.com, and clicking on the YouTube link. Or you can drop us an email at wakefromsleep@protonmail.com.
Talk to you next week, Chris.
Cheers, Rod.